Welcome to the Tech Cat Show with host Lori H. Schwartz. Each week we hear from established leaders in the technology and consumer industry. Finding out the scoop should never be this much fun. Now, here is your host, Lori H. Schwartz.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the show. And this week, we are kicking off a month-long series on the blockchain. And we're going to get into a whole description of what it's about and why that is the hot new buzzword and why so many businesses, so many strategists and technologists are foaming at the mouth about the blockchain right now. And so to help sort of set the tone for this conversation and really help us understand what this is all about is, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Seth Shapiro. Let's have a big tech cat. Now, Seth is the CEO and founder of Alpha Networks, which is a blockchain-powered platform for the creation and optimization of new and existing video networks. He's also a two-time Emmy winner, and he's a leading advisor in business, innovation, media, and technology. He has his hands in a lot of different things, including teaching at USC in cinema arts. He's written a well-known book on television called Television, Innovation, Disruption, and the World's Most Powerful Medium. And now he's digging deep into the world of blockchain. So Seth is going to fill us in. So Seth, welcome to the show.
Well, hello, Lori. It's good to be back.
Now, you were on the show a couple of years ago when you were more focused on the future of television, and you were a governor at the Television Academy, and you were in the midst of writing your book, and you were really sort of helping us understand the future of where the entertainment industry was going. And now here we are about 2 years later, and so many things have been disrupted, including the very nature of how we move content around and how, you know, what we know as the internet, what we know as distribution is working. So much of that is what the blockchain is all about. So maybe you can sort of set the stage for us about what this is all about.
Yeah, 100%. Can you hear me okay, by the way?
Yeah, you sound great.
Okay, good. So we talked about this a little bit last time, but, you know, if you look at media, it kind of divides into these discrete eras, which I kind of think of as broadcast being the first era. And then we had the cable era, and now we're in this thing which I would call the broadband era. And at the end of all these cycles, you can kind of see things coming off the rails a little bit. So at the beginning of these kind of eras, everything's working great and everybody's making money and people are happy and it's firing all cylinders and it feels like it's going to go on forever. And then there's just enough things that don't work that you really need a new era of innovation. So if you think about it from a broadcast perspective, right, we had three networks and then four networks. And the issue there was, you know, it was great for a while people got acclimated to the idea of TV and loved TV, but eventually they start to feel like there was just no choice, right? There just weren't enough choices. And so that's when cable really came in and greatly expanded the number of options that people had, and you didn't necessarily need a huge audience. You could do really well with a smaller audience, and as an example of that, when the team that built ESPN first started thinking about doing it, everybody thought they were crazy. Like the idea of a 24/7 sports network, everybody in the television business thought was the stupidest idea they'd ever heard. But that was a real sea change where something like ESPN or MTV didn't need the huge audience that a CBS or an NBC did back in the 50s or the 60s or the 70s. They just needed like a specific audience that, you know, could reach a certain kind of demographic and a certain type of advertiser. And because you had so many channels in the cable bundle, each of which was getting a license fee, it turned out to be a really huge business. Then that sort of got disrupted by the internet, where all of a sudden cable and traditional TV had a huge competitor in online delivery. And so what you and I have been living through for, like, let's just say the last 15 years is the movement of content from cable or satellite delivery to IP delivery, to internet delivery, which is obviously where everything's going. And we're solidly in that era now. But there are problems, right? Piracy is rampant. You still got these huge bundles of channels that people pay for, a lot of which they never watch. You've got these weird situations where you pay for a certain channel on traditional TV, but you still can't really get it online, or you can't get it on your device. You've got all these multiple complicated logins. advertisers aren't super happy because traditional kind of major, what are called MVPDs, the kind of Comcast, DirecTV, Spectrum guys, their numbers are going down. So the model's breaking in a lot of ways now, and I think that what I'm really bullish on is that this blockchain era will be the next thing that follows this broadband era in media.
And give us, just because this is really the first time we're digging into it, and of course everyone has heard a lot about Bitcoin. Bitcoin certainly has made the news, and everybody's trying to figure it all out, and that's lives off the blockchain, but I don't think a lot of people really understand what the blockchain is. So maybe you can give us sort of your, you know, a simplified explanation of it.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the easiest way to begin to understand the implications of the blockchain usually are to think about its kind of killer app to date, which is Bitcoin, relative to banking. So let's just think about how money works as opposed to the way that the internet has changed other businesses. So right now, if you deposit a check and write a check in the same day, there's a very good chance that, depending on how much funding you have, they're going to send you a bounce, right? You're going to get a $35 transaction. You're going to get dinged a $35 bounce fee, even though you deposited money the same day. And a lot of people have had that experience, right? You write a check, you deposit, you've got $100 in your bank account, and you deposit a check for $1,000, and at the same time, you write a check for $500. And for some reason, the bank debits your $500 before they deposit your $1,000. And so you kind of gnash your teeth, but there's really not a lot you can do about it. The reason for that is that the banking system is really based on a ledger, a ledger being, like, for anybody who's used QuickBooks or Quicken or any kind of money tracking program, a ledger is basically, you know, a list of transactions. And in a banking situation, a traditional banking situation, that ledger is owned by the bank. So you can complain and you can sort of say, hey, how come you did this? But there's not a lot of recourse. One of the fascinating things about the blockchain is that what it does is it creates, if you can imagine a ledger, so like a series of transactions that instead of living in Laurie Schwartz's Quicken account, which connects to Bank of America, it actually lives out in the cloud, and there is a complete sort of ledger in the sky, which is available to everybody that records every transaction made in that ledger. Now, it's anonymized, so it doesn't say Laurie Schwartz. It's a series of digits. But essentially, it moves economic transactions from being controlled by a bank to sort of being in a what's kind of called a triple ledger system, where the actual internet is out there, almost sort of the way that peer-to-peer works, where you've got multiple people looking at the same files or voting on the same stuff. Essentially, the real revolution of Bitcoin was it created a system where you didn't need a bank, where money became peer-to-peer, and the actual series of transactions that happened lived in a completely distributed ledger that was available to everybody, so that if Lori sends Seth 5 Bitcoin, that transaction is permanently written into the Bitcoin ledger, which is available to anyone in the world. Again, it won't say Lori and it won't say Seth. You'll know that it's you and I'll know that it's me. But various parties to this ledger then authenticate that transaction. And I know that sounds complicated, and it sounds complicated because it really is a big idea. It's, if you think about the way that things worked before the internet relative to the way that things worked after. So, like, Lori, when you and I were kids, if we wanted to get a Beatles record, right, we went to Corvettes or whatever, and we bought the record at the store. Like, if I had said to you when you and I were kids, hey, one day you're just going to be able to go onto a computer and download any song anywhere in the world you are for free, you'd kind of, it would take you a while to get your head around that idea, right? That's kind of the level of leap that the blockchain represents. Instead of you going to a single source for information or having a transaction that just lives between two people. There's sort of a third party in the middle of all these transactions, and the third party is the consensus of a distributed list of transactions that is pretty hard to hack and pretty hard to manipulate. And so what happened was, around the time of the original financial meltdown in 2008, when it became clear that, you know, the banks, you know, were kind of at it again, which they are, you know, every 20 years or every 80 years or so, there's a major financial meltdown. And every 40 years or so, there's a significant one that's sort of on the off cycle of that. But, you know, banks do what they can. Banks are in the business of making money. And so there was actually an unknown figure named Satoshi Nakamoto, who was a person or persons who we don't actually know who it was, or there were a lot of theories. And what he hypothesized was a way of creating a digital form of currency that could not be manipulated, that in order to get this currency, to sort of win it or to acquire it, you had to have computers solve an increasingly complex set of problems, of puzzles, essentially, in cryptography. So, you know, computers do a certain amount of work, and it yields a Bitcoin. And so what he hypothesized is this idea that you could actually have a form of money that nobody could manipulate, that nobody could game, that you couldn't print more of, that a central bank couldn't get fancy with. And over time, given the banking crisis, the idea got more and more credence. And so there are these two sort of ideas that are in parallel. One is the underlying blockchain technology, which is this distributed ledger technology that basically kind of creates a whole new world of sort of crowdsourced opportunities in all sorts of businesses that we can talk about. And the killer app that sort of launched this all was this idea of Bitcoin, which is a specific form of digital currency similar to gold. That obviously we read a lot about. And so, I mean, we could take this conversation whichever way you want, but those are the two big ideas. There's blockchain, which is the underlying technology, and then Bitcoin, which is the most famous application of it.
That's fantastic, and that's a great summary right before we need to take a break. So when we come back, I want to move away from Bitcoin and talk really about how blockchain is basically going to disrupt how we do business in a lot of different categories, and specifically on the content and entertainment side, since that's where you live. I want to talk about the businesses and the new companies that you're building that are helping to leverage blockchain. So we're going to be back in a moment digging into the future of our world with Seth Shapiro, who is the CEO and founder of Alpha Networks. We'll be back in a moment on the TechCat Show.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
The key point of contact between consumers and brands is technology. StoryTech, a boutique agency, empowers you to use that tech to deliver your message, engage your customers, and raise the bottom line. How do you track and exploit the trends? How do you stay ahead of industry disruption? And how do you maximize profit from content? From strategy to execution, the answer is StoryTech. Inform, innovate, create. Visit us at story-tech.com. That's story-tech.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
This is the Tech Cat Show with Lori H. Schwartz. If you want to find out more about our show or to leave a comment or question, send an email to Lori at techcat.tv. That's Lori at techcat.tv.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back on the Tech Cat Show with Seth Shapiro, who's a two-time Emmy Award winner and a leading advisor in business, innovation, media, and tech. And right now, he's very focused in the world of blockchain. And Seth just gave us a great summary of what the blockchain really is, and also how the more sort of famous piece of the puzzle, Bitcoin, which has been really talked about so much in the last 6 months in the news, where people are making a lot of money and some people are not. But Seth has a particular interest, I think, in this space. You have your hands in a lot of different businesses as an advisor. So maybe you can tell us about where some of this is going for you and the areas that you're playing in.
Right. So the one that that I'm involved in that's the best known and is kind of going to be a big story in the coming months is something called VideoCoin. VideoCoin is essentially sort of a competitor to Amazon in a way that you'll understand. But just to explain kind of where the media business finds itself right now, as I was saying, the media business has really had to adapt to the huge growth of viewing of content online. And so if you think about this, if you're a TV network or a movie studio or something, but let's talk about cable, about TV networks, because that's it's actually really interesting. So you've got a TV network, and people are paying Comcast or DirecTV or whoever to get access to your network, but you or your kids, and definitely your kids, are like, hey, I don't want to watch this on the big TV. I want to watch it on my tablet or my phone. So increasingly, there's pressure on the owners of all these TV networks to get their content available online, right? So here's the issue for them. They don't really make, there's not a lot of incremental revenue around that. So essentially, most TV networks are being hosted by Amazon Web Services or AWS. AWS is by far the largest source of revenue for Amazon. You know, it's kind of a, you know, an open secret in the media business that, I mean, even Netflix, which is kind of shocking, but even Netflix runs on Amazon Web Services. So they really have this huge infrastructural advantage in the fact that they've got so much scale in serving internet video and files. So basically, most of the TV network groups that put their networks online use Amazon. So what that means is that Amazon is essentially setting a rate card for serving TV networks, and every stream that you serve of a particular network, whether it's MTV or FX or whoever it is, or Netflix even, Amazon's getting paid for every stream. And so what we're doing at VideoCoin, where I'm head of strategy, is Halsey Miner, who kind of most famously is the founder of CNET and was co-founder of Salesforce, real visionary in the you know, in the last internet era, got together with a great CTO named Devadutta Ghat, who had been the head of Intel Video. Intel Video actually was sold off and became Facebook Video. So Intel divested the group, and that became the basis of Facebook Videos. And the hypothesis of our company, a VideoCoin, is really because all of these video networks are paying so much to have their stuff hosted by Amazon, what if we could kind of decentralize that, which is a big theme in blockchain? In other words, instead of having one central authority, whether it's the bank or in this case, Amazon, what if you could incentivize all sorts of people that have server capacity, whether it's a server farm that has extra servers or somebody at home that just has a lot of computers, and say, hey, if you serve our video using our solution, we're going to pay you in tokens. So we're going to give you microtransactions for every video stream you serve on our behalf. And so that's actually the infrastructure that we've built. And what's really fascinating is we expect that when the system is fully deployed, we'll be reducing the cost of serving video for major enterprises from 60 to 80%. And the reason is because, again, kind of a central theme of blockchain, we're going to decentralize it. Instead of going to one central source for doing your video serving, storage, and transcoding, which in this case would be Amazon Web Services, we're going to empower people all over the world and server farms and, you know, medium small businesses to serve video and then get compensated in our currency. Which is just kind of a fascinating direction. I think that you're going to see more and more of that. You'll see
across other business categories, right? Taking the monopoly away from companies. So you're basically taking Amazon down in a way.
Well, we're going up against it, and I mean, obviously, they've got plenty of business. Although I guess today they've taken a little bit of a hit because apparently Trump has some issues with them. But I mean, Amazon is a juggernaut. It's the number two. I think it's number two market cap company now, and a huge piece of that is the fact that when you unpack their financials, 80% of internet traffic is really video. I mean, internet from a business perspective, in many ways, is a video delivery system, right? Like Netflix and peak hours in the United States is like 50% of internet traffic at certain times. So that's a huge market, and that's the one that we're taking on. But exactly your point, Lori, that's true across all sorts of verticals. You see it in banking, you see it in insurance, you see it in different forms of asset service, you see it in all kinds of different businesses.
So I'm looking at some stats here. So it's estimated that the world will reach 3 trillion internet video minutes per month by 2020. And then we're looking at HD and Ultra HD, which is going to suck up more bandwidth. And then when you start to think about 4K and what's going on with VR, you know, all that storage and moving that stuff around. So you're basically positioning VideoCoin to be in that game. And to handle this growing market.
Yep, that's exactly right. Because if you think about, to your point about 4K and HDR, and VR, frankly, 360 video, I work with a lot of the major studios, and as we started VideoCoin, I talked to a bunch of them, and I said, you know, what are your issues relative to video storage and serving? And it's not just, and transcoding, and it's not just the cost for the stuff they have to do, like putting various networks online. It's all the really cool stuff that they can't try because it's just so expensive. So, for example, you know, serving an HD stream of a TV show is one level of data expense. But if you get into VR and 360 or 4K, you've got a whole other, the more bandwidth you have, the more expensive it is. So one of the things we're really excited about is the notion of doing trials, and we'll start announcing them. But what's public is some of our advisors who've come on board are Hanabase, who's the CTO of Fox, of 20th Century Fox, is part of our team. John Ward, who's head of video operations for AT&T DirecTV, is with us. Ted Chilowitz, who's a futurist at Paramount. And so what we're looking at is things that we can do to reduce the cost of trying really new cool stuff. So we've got a related entity to VideoCoin called Live Planet, which has developed like a whole 360 camera through solution. And what happened was as this team, you know, related team started doing more work with VR, they found out that their Amazon Web Services bills were just huge. So the more VR you try to serve over the net, you wind up with these huge service bills. So what we're going to do is really actively try to bring the cost down so people can try all sorts of really new, cool stuff. And that's what's really exciting about this as well.
And are you at all concerned that, you know, just like you can't keep track of the new coins, you know, being launched these days, are you at all concerned that there are going to be competitors to VideoCoin, that other folks are putting together, you know, blockchain-like solutions for video distribution as well? I mean, what's to stop a studio from building their own?
That's a great question. I mean, there will be competitors. I mean, in this particular case, video engineering talent, really world-class video engineering talent, it's pretty hard to come by, actually, and so we've got the team that built, as I said, you know, basically the infrastructure that powers Facebook Video was Intel's team first. So that's a pretty that's a pretty good moat. There no doubt will be other people that try and do it, but we think between having a really great tech team and having really deep business relationships, and I mean, as you know, understanding the problems of these. Of the actual clients is a big part of this because, I mean, I've met with, like, one of the things that's interesting about blockchain is it's a very global business, right? And in many ways, America is frankly, unfortunately, pretty far behind. So I meet regularly in kind of my other role is being part of a fund in this space with companies, and Asia and Argentina and South America and you know, all over the world. And a lot of them have great tech, but Hollywood is a pretty specific culture. So you've got a lot of people that are trying to solve problems for industries that they really don't understand. And so I think a lot of these kind of new blockchain companies or ICOs, they may be addressing a problem that's real, but whether or not they have the expertise to actually solve it is a completely different question.
And when you say ICO, which stands for initial coin offering, is that how you would also refer to something on the blockchain that's getting funded, or is that only related to Bitcoin solutions?
Okay, so going back to the sort of the currency issue of this, Bitcoin is sort of the best known cryptocurrency.
Right.
But the notion of the blockchain is that you can have a potentially infinite number of different currencies. So a way to think about it is we've got the U.S. dollar, we've got the pound, we've got the euro, we've got the yuan. There's, you know, a series of global currencies which are, you know, generally, you know, associated with particular regions or nationalities. What the potential for cryptocurrencies is to create units of exchange that are specific to specific use cases. So let me give you an example, because that's kind of hard to get your head around. When we were kids and you went to Disney World or Disneyland, right? Remember, you had A tickets and B tickets and C tickets and E tickets and all that.
Yeah.
A Disneyland ticket, you don't buy a ticket to Disneyland with the expectation of being able to sell it later for more money, right?
That's
just silly. You buy Disneyland tickets so you can go to Disneyland and use them. And so a lot of the better currencies are really about creating a specific use for a specific, a specific solution for a specific problem. So, for example, you know, if you are helping people, you know, in the process of serving and storing and transcoding video, or you are helping people to complete invoices, or you are helping people to source talent, or to pay people in a microtransactional way that would be completely impractical if you had to cut them a check every time, because it might be the equivalent of two and a half cents, you know, each time, where writing a check is actually just more expensive than it's worth. So a lot of these currencies are about solving specific problems, and
right.
It's kind of a Wild West situation where, to your point, you've got hundreds and hundreds of different, you know, entities, and so the term ICO refers to an initial coin offering, and it's not actually, you know, the term is not beloved by everybody, but it kind of comes from the notion of an IPO, initial public offering, where you offer stock. The notion became, well, what if we just sell tokens in order to raise money for a particular project? And so that's been a big industry. Various American regulatory agencies are weighing in on how they view that, and the American climate around that is actually, you know, definitely more sober than it is in a lot of other places in the world. But you've got all sorts of different pieces. And in a way, it's kind of equivalent to what we had during the internet bubble, where you had, you know, all of these companies and all of these companies and all of these companies. And frankly, a lot of them didn't last. But in a way, you know, out of that kind of, you know, wild period, we wound up with Google and Amazon. A lot of the companies that dominate today. So we will wind up with a new crop of really transformational companies, and then a lot of other stuff that just sort of falls by the wayside.
And that's a great end note for this section. We're going to be back in a moment with Seth Shapiro, who is really laying out the future of the infrastructure, I think, of a lot of the content, money, all the different business categories that we all live in. CEO and founder of Alpha Networks. We'll be back in a moment on the TechCat Show.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
The key point of contact between consumers and brands is technology. StoryTech, a boutique agency, empowers you to use that tech to deliver your message, engage your customers, and raise the bottom line. How do you track and exploit the trends? How do you stay ahead of industry disruption? And how do you maximize profit from content? From strategy to execution, the answer is StoryTech. Inform, innovate, create. Visit us at story-tech.com. That's story-tech.com.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio. Voice America Business Network.
This is the Tech Cat Show with Lori H. Schwartz. If you want to find out more about our show or to leave a comment or question, send an email to Lori at techcat.tv. That's Lori at techcat.tv.
Now, Seth, you also have your hands in a lot of different funds and companies as an advisor. So I know that you learn a lot from that. And what we're often hearing about all these different companies, like you mentioned, is this global footprint. And we keep hearing about China. Now, I also know that you recently returned from Puerto Rico, where there was a big week-long multitude of conferences around cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin and blockchain. So I'm just wondering, you know, in the globe, you know, is there a region that right now seems to be doing the most in this? Is it really coming from all over the place? You know, where do you focus in this exploding marketplace?
That's a great question. And the answer is it changes a lot. And part of the wild thing about this industry is that you spend a lot of time on the road because you know, you can't throw a rock without hitting a blockchain conference. I mean, even in LA, there's probably one every day. But I mean, you multiply that by the number of regions where this is a real big thing. So, for example, I'm part of a fund called Alphabet Fund, which is out of the UAE, and it's a fully regulated cryptocurrency hedge fund. And the benchmark of the fund is to return alpha above Bitcoin. So, in other words, we have to outperform Bitcoin or we don't make anything. And so our fund is constantly investing in new companies, but also trading different currencies and you know, doing the kind of things that traditional hedge funds do. And so, yeah, you know, we see a lot of different deals coming in, and you're looking at all the things that people are applying this to. And it's kind of, it's amazing because it's everything from trying to make the insurance industry more efficient to creating a tokenization for patents and IP, and to create faster processes for remittance payments, which is kind of that's a good one to talk about. So one of the really inefficient businesses in the world, which, I mean, we're lucky not to have to deal with this, but if you are an expat living in one territory where you've migrated to try and make more money so you can send money home, you really do get gouged. So there's remittance carters. You obviously, we know about sort of the American-Mexican one, but there are a number of them all over the world, and people sending money back home. It's very expensive to do it. The Western unions of the world take a really big piece. You have to wait online for a long time. So one of the great kind of promises that other parts of the world really get that we don't have to get here because we're not dealing with this is for people who are unbanked, who don't have the ability to wire money, these kind of currencies are a godsend because if I'm going to send $500 back to my family in India and I'm looking at giving up, 10-15% of that money and waiting online for 2 hours, if I could just, you know, buy a really, one of the cryptocurrencies that are optimized to be very fast, I could send that money, you know, back home in 10 minutes with virtually no cost. And so in Africa and India, there's a huge, I think, understanding that this stuff is not just sort of an interesting business, but it's really potentially life-changing for people who have tremendous trouble moving money and are the ones who really pay, you know, exorbitant fees to move money around. So depending on where you are in the world, there's a different perspective. Actually, two of the really active countries in this market are Korea and Japan. China, to your point, has been heavily involved. There are a number of currencies issuing out of China. NEO is a big one. Bitcoin Cash has a huge component in China. And so, you know, different parts of the world are competing to sort of become homes of this kind of new business. And it's a little bit sad because, you know, America, Silicon Valley, was the undisputed home of the Internet. And in this new Internet of money, the U.S. is not, you know, being super competitive. So you've got all sorts of other regions that are sort of jumping into the fray. Puerto Rico, to your point, is actually a really interesting place because there's actually a tax treaty between Puerto Rico and the United States so that companies that are in this area can get tremendous tax advantages by moving to Puerto Rico and building their businesses there. And so that's kind of become a hotbed for Americans. But there are places like Malta that are a hotbed for Canadians. There's Switzerland, which has a huge role. And you know, Eastern Europe is actually turning out to be a really interesting market. So, and you know, in a lot of the investments that we see, you know, a lot of the money's coming in to Western companies from Asians. So it's kind of an unprecedented global mix of different parts of the world trying to figure out how they can leverage this new opportunity.
So is there then, in this new world, is there such a thing as regions? You know, I mean, are we looking at this like we're in China, we're in Puerto Rico, we're in Silicon Valley? Because does anything have a home if it's a sort of cloud-based ledger that has no base?
The answer is yes, and it's interesting. It's a good question. Every company that sort of exists, right, just because we're still living in the physical world, everything is domiciled somewhere. So you can be, if you're going to create one of these entities, you've got to house it somewhere. And so what's happening is, in the same way that, you know, famously Apple's money goes through Dublin, right? There's all sorts of offshore entities that American companies use to not pay, to pay less, you know, less tax back to Uncle Sam, and that's not illegal. That's just the way the system's set up. And so what's happening right now is different parts of the world are saying, hey, this is a really exciting industry. Let's create incentives to get more of this stuff to happen here. So that's happening in some cases in kind of smaller nations that are looking at this as a potential kind of huge, you know, net win for their economies, for the local economies. On the part of the larger companies, so China, for example, there's a few currencies that China has not necessarily actively backed as a nation, but for example, there's something called NEO. One of the, you know, there's sort of the number two currency globally is called Ethereum. Ethereum is in many ways the platform or the currency that powers a lot of these new companies. And that's probably a separate conversation, but China has effectively backed its own horses unofficially in this race. So there are major Chinese currencies, and there are, you know, different you know, advantages to putting your company here. So it's this amazing time, that one of those periods where, you know, the cards are up in the air and it's not clear how they're going to settle when they all fall back down. But you know, the UAE is looking at this as a potential thing, as the sort of fossil fuels industry that's been so good to them declines. Maybe they want to be kind of an area that houses blockchain-based companies. And, you know, again, Switzerland is you know, got a Zug, sort of called Crypto Valley. And Liechtenstein, which is near Switzerland, is thinking, how do we get into this business? So it's an extraordinary
So are you flying all over the place now, literally? Like, you're just everywhere?
You kind of have to be. It's a bit much, but you know, yeah, like you said, I was just in Puerto Rico. I'll probably be heading to Dubai. I'll be in San Francisco next week. There's one in Korea that I was supposed to be at next week. You just kind of can't do them all, but you know, this won't last forever. But for now, it's a tremendously exciting time where, you know, it's kind of like you need to be in the room where it happened.
And is it, are these basically conferences, and that's why you're bopping around, because that's where all the deals are being made?
Yeah, there are conferences, which are obviously, you know, the forums for these ideas, and it's just kind of a common meeting ground for people. So it's easier to meet a bunch of prospective deals at a conference than it is to fly to, you know, a ton of different places. It's sort of like in the venture model, traditionally, you know, partners would have a specific territory because you can't just be everywhere at once. That's harder now because this is such a global industry. So you kind of just try to, you know, maximize your firepower and meet with as many people as you can in a couple of days at a conference.
And so my other question for you is just in terms of the types of people that you're dealing with now, is it CTOs? Is it chief technology officers? Is it investors? You know, who is the sort of profile of the individuals that are jumping into this space?
Primarily it's an entrepreneurial climate just by definition. You've got this essentially relatively new industry that's going to attract people who are interested in building new stuff. But by and large, they're entrepreneurs who hopefully have subject matter expertise in a specific area, whether it's insurance or, you know, or computer viruses
like your video. You have a video background.
Right,
so,
exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And some of these people have really figured out amazing ways to reinvent their incumbent business or improve on their incumbent business using, you know, either a new form of currency or a new form of technology or reinventing their infrastructure on the blockchain. And you know, and a lot of them are kind of, frankly, similar to what you may have read about with, the Long Island Iced Tea Company that renamed itself the Blockchain IC company, and their stock tripled. So, you know,
it's
not,
crazy.
Not a good example. So there's a lot of people to jump on the bandwagon.
I think if you added CBD to the name of anything blockchain, you would really make a lot of money right now, because it seems like everything is blockchain and everything has CBD in it. And for you, you know, as a strategist, as an investor, you know, as someone who sits on a lot of different boards, you know, do you see yourself, you know, does this look like this is going to be where your, you know, career sort of stays is in these different blockchain businesses? Is this the final sort of tier for distribution?
Well, I think this stuff is now where the internet was in maybe 95 or 6. So if you think about that era, there were still a lot of naysayers. There were still a lot of people who didn't get it. And there were some people who were like, yeah, this internet thing is going to be really transformative. But it was before, for example, internet video was so powerful that, you know, you had the complete undeniable game changer. You know, Amazon hadn't really happened yet. So I think we're at this point now where there's this kind of potential for all sorts of amazing stuff, but it's going to have peaks and valleys, and it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be, you know, like a downhill cruise. I'm committed to it for the long term, because I think this is the next great era of the redefinition of this stuff. It's almost like this is the next era of the internet, whether you call it the internet of money or the decentralized era. This is the era where a lot of things a lot of opportunities are going to open up, and a lot of businesses that sort of resisted resisted disruption in the last internet era are going to get reinvented this time. And I think media will be a big part of that. I don't think there's anything. I can't think of anything as interesting as this stuff.
And on that note, we're going to take one more break as Seth sort of sets the stage for the world that we're living in. So we're going to be back in a moment on the Tech Cat Show, really digging into how to play in this game with blockchain. Back in a moment on the Tech Cat Show.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
The key point of contact between consumers and brands is technology. StoryTech, a boutique agency, empowers you to use that tech to deliver your message, engage your customers, and raise the bottom line. How do you track and exploit the trends? How do you stay ahead of industry disruption? And how do you maximize profit from content? From strategy to execution, the answer is StoryTech. Inform, innovate, create. Visit us at story-tech.com. That's story-tech.com.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern for the Money Answers Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
This is the Tech Cat Show with Lori H. Schwartz. If you want to find out more about our show or to leave a comment or question, send an email to Lori at techcat.tv. That's Lori at techcat.tv.
And we've been getting the down low on the blockchain from Mr. Seth Shapiro, who's the CEO and founder of Alpha Networks, which is a blockchain-powered platform for the creation and optimization of new and existing video networks. And Seth also is head of strategy at VideoCoin, head of business development at Alphabet Digital Currency Fund, and of course, an advisor to a number of other companies who are starting to look at new models and leveraging the blockchain to create new businesses. So where can someone learn about this? Say they understand that they need to jump in and they want to figure out how to get into the blockchain and maybe take their category expertise. So what would you suggest to them? I know that you talked a lot about how you attend a lot of conferences where the business is actually getting done. But what would you suggest to someone?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, we're actually developing a new service for that, so I'll come back and we can say more about it. I do think that this industry suffers from not having kind of a clean, well-lit place for really good information. The issue is people go to YouTube and, you know, it's luck of the draw. They may watch something that's really informative and accurate, or they just may watch something that's basically a scammy kind of a thing where somebody's pumping something. So, I mean, unfortunately, at this point, we're in early days where you kind of need to look at a lot of different sources. And I mean, the best thing is to actually find somebody that you know that understands something about this space and have them kind of walk you through the process. There's like four kind of things that you can do to really understand this stuff from a functional perspective. One is there's a very famous company called Coinbase, which is, I think, actually the number one app in the App Store now. So you can go and open a Coinbase account. It's super easy. And I would say buy $10 of Bitcoin and buy $10 of Ethereum and just let it sit there and watch it. If you get more adventurous, there's a number of exchanges where you can actually – so from Coinbase, there's only three or four different currencies. But from these exchanges, there's hundreds and hundreds. And so, you know, the best way to learn about something is to kind of stick your toe in and do it. So if you're feeling adventurous, the most famous American exchange is called Bittrex, B-I-T-T-R-E-X. The most famous Asian one is called Binance, like finance with a B. I would say you could open an account with one of those and then just kind of look around and you know, one step at a time, you know, buy a little bit of this stuff, not a lot, just enough, then read about it more, you know, go to places like CoinDesk, Cointelegraph. There's a number of newsletters. I mean, there's you know, an endless avalanche of stuff out there on the open internet about this stuff. But I would say if you know somebody who's interested in this stuff, have them point you towards some good sources. I'll come back when we have more that we can share about what we're doing. And then people also can send it. If they send me an email, actually, at info@SethShapiro.com, which is just my name, then, you know, we could put together maybe a list of resources to pass on to Tech Cat readers. How about that?
golden. And what else just in the area of trends is interesting to you right now? Because you're always sort of, you know, at the edge of something. So if we moved away from blockchain for a minute, is there anything else that you're, you know, keeping your eyes open on? And I know for a while you were exploring VR pretty deeply and AR. Is there any other areas of new tech that you think are going to revolutionize, you know, business categories or even entertainment as we know it?
Yeah, I think the big one is going to be the intersection of VR, AR, AI, and blockchain. I think when those three things start to come together, which is kind of just slowly happening, because when you go into a virtual world, you're not going to use dollars. It doesn't make any sense. So what will happen is virtual worlds, and, like, you know, it's kind of auspicious timing, right? I think Ready Player One opens tomorrow. Like, when you go into these virtual worlds, you're going to conduct transactions using not using dollars. There's all sorts of amazing things that happen when you can do microtransactions. I mean, as you know, we used to have a blog network with like 1,000 bloggers, and every month it was, well, what am I going to do? Write somebody a check for 20 cents and another person a check for $15,000. There's all sorts of things. Money is still a very, very analog thing. And I think that's one of the things that's really holding up VR, the VR revolution. It's just economically, you know, dollars are just a little bit too kludgy for virtual worlds. And I think you're going to see more things, and it's going to sound really abstract when I say it now, but you're going to see things where things like AI and machine learning and VR and cryptocurrencies come together, and suddenly you're going to go into this other world that just kind of works. And there's going to be a tremendous number of people that are just not going to want to come out again. Which is obviously the kind of thing that Ready Player One gets into. But I think those three, the convergence of those three areas, VR, AR, AI, and blockchain, that's the trend of the decade.
Well, I love how you summarized it like that, because certainly a lot of the conversations we've been having in the last 6 months sort of has been hacking away at all those various topics. And, you know, it's interesting to watch how the conversations all lead to them. All converging. And just, you know, on a last note before we wrap up, where can we just read more about what you're doing? Are you tweeting? You know, are you still writing on your own site, SethShapiro.com? Where can we keep up with you?
I mean, it's kind of crazy right now. I'm still in session at USC. We're actually writing a bunch of stuff that's going to come out soon. I mean, I guess instead of saying that, people could definitely go to my site. And we actually do tweet pretty often, you know, things that are just of general interest. But I guess one thing that I would throw in here that's kind of interesting for people to check out in our industry, another company that we didn't mention that I'm an advisor to is called Kodak Coin. Kodak Coin made a big splash at CES because it was sort of the first, kind of blockchain company that got affiliated with a major kind of brand like Kodak. And what's really interesting is there's been all this stuff about in the press about what Kodak Coin is or isn't, but what it really is a company that has the ability to actually go out and really clean up digital rights. So, for example, part of the problem has been for content creators in the internet age is, you know, what the internet allows you to do is to make a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. And that's great if you're a user, but if you're somebody who owns a piece of property who wants to get compensated for that, then that's tough. And so I think you're going to see this whole era of new companies that's going to come online that's going to kind of make things more efficient, put the genie back in the bottle a little bit. And, you know, my dream would be that through these kind of blockchain-related companies, we create an economy where people actually get paid real money for their creative work, and that they can do it directly from the audience. So that instead of having to wait for your check to come from Comcast or Disney, you can actually do something amazing, creative, put it out on there online, and then get compensated directly from your users in a fair way without the stuff being pirated to death. And so, you know, that's kind of an overall trend that I'm really excited about. And, you know, I'll come back and talk more about it when we can share more of what we're doing.
Cool. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we have been getting the down low on blockchain and cryptocurrency and a number of interesting ways to think about what's really happening in our world and how everything that we sort of understand is being disrupted. And we have to start paying more attention to where we can take our businesses. With Seth Shapiro, the CEO and founder of Alpha Networks, a two-time Emmy Award winner, a friend and buddy of mine. And Seth, thanks so much for taking time to talk to us. I know you're all over the place. You're somewhere else right
now,
too.
Yeah, well, I'm in beautiful downtown Burbank right now, but yeah, I'm on a plane soon. So thanks for having me, Lori.
It's great to have you. And this is Lori on the Tech Cat Show. And next week, we're going to continue digging into the world of the blockchain. And we're going to be talking to somebody from Soft Vision and how they are looking at the blockchain. And all month long, we're going to be digging more into the future of distribution of all things, really. So it's been great talking to you, and we'll be back next week on the Tech Cat Show.
Thanks so much for listening to the Tech Cat Show. Please join Lori H. Schwartz again for another great program next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, on the Voice America Business Channel and syndicated to the Voice America Women's Channel.